podcast is part of the Batman Universe Podcast Network, hosted by thebatmanuniverse.net. Here, we love talking about everything Batman. Thebatmanuniverse.net has news, original content, and reviews about Batman comics, movies, TV shows, video games, and more. Check out thebatmanuniverse.net and join our Discord server to start chatting with fellow fans. We can't wait to talk to you guys. Also, visit our Patreon page and join our other awesome supporters. But enough of this nonsense. On with the show.
Welcome to the Batman Universe Comic Podcast, Season 16, Episode 5. I'm your host, Ian.
And this is Theo.
And we are sadly Stephless because she is not feeling well, so our thoughts and prayers go to Steph. In the meantime, we have a ton to get to because it was a five-week month last month, so we've got a little catch-up to do. Plus, they did double shipping, so we still did our full reviews. I have a little bit of news to get started with. DC Comics in July is switching back to Wednesday releases, and this makes Ian very sad because he likes going to the comic store on Tuesday.
Why? That means you would have to travel to the comic store twice.
I buy almost no Marvel, so I don't really.
No.
Also happening in July, Mark Waid and Dan Mora are doing an event called Absolute Power. It's listed as a four-issue miniseries plus prelude issues and spin-off issues. I don't know if it's going to be releasing weekly or if it's going to be July through October, but I guess we'll find out. The story that we know is Amanda Waller is going to use both Zur-En-Arr and Brainiac Queen's technology from Chip Zdarsky's Batman run, which is why I'm mentioning it now, and of course Josh Williamson's Superman crossover House of Brainiac. Any thoughts on Absolute Power?
Well, I guess this was the evil trinity that they've been talking about all this time, so we're finally getting it. Not excited until I know more, but being that I'm not a fan of Amanda Waller, meh.
Yeah. I tend to agree. The concept of this event seems like superhero punch-em-up, and that's, I don't know. I'm not reading World's Finest. I'm not reading Shazam. I'm not on the Waid train. I know some people really are. Some people really love what he's doing, so I hope that they're excited. I'm interested that it's tying into the current Batman and Superman runs. I'm also interested that it's not tying into the Wonder Woman run, but that's really all the thoughts I have. We do know that this means that Zur-En-Arr is going to keep going until this event's done.
I continue to wonder why they are just breaking their necks trying to make Amanda Waller relevant.
I mean, for the same reason they keep trying to make Suicide Squad relevant, nostalgia. We had announcement of a new trade initiative or collection initiative called DC Finest. What I'm hearing is that these are going to be similar to the Marvel Epic collections, which are sort of like, they're basically large collections of anywhere between 13 and 25-ish comics. So they're big chunks, but not as big as a compendium, which is basically a soft cover omnibus. And they're going to be doing a lot of chronological runs. So they're going to be doing Batman's Year 1 and 2 and stories in between. And Catwoman, pretty much everything, including the Newell run up to the first year of the Balint run. So those are the Batman issues they have solicited. And they're saying it's going to be a quote-unquote affordable $35 per volume. I had nothing to do with the language of affordable. That sounds a little expensive to me personally, but that's what DC thinks. What do you think about these DC Finest? Are they going to be in your collection, Theo?
Probably not. Especially the Batman titles, considering I pretty much have the floppies already.
Yeah, we probably have most of these already.
So, yeah, not certain. Yeah, okay. I mean, I guess it'll...
You gonna get that Catwoman, the super depressing Mindy Newell run?
No, I mean, I got most of the run of my favorite time, which was the Jim Villain. So, you know, that art with my favorite cat suit was, yeah, about price being what it is, I don't know. But, I mean, it has to be something really, really exciting for me to buy something that I may already have. You know, so I, for example, have most of all of the She-Hulk runs, but I have a few of those omnibuses. I have a few Batman omnibuses, but that's pretty much it. Oh, yeah. Of course, we have Super Sons just because it's Super Sons.
Something that puzzles me a little bit is that this is going to overlap, and I think already is overlapping with the Caped Crusader and Dark Knight Detective collections, which were already about 10 to 15 issues each. But of course, those were specifically focused on the Batman and Detective Comics runs between Year One or Infinite Crisis, Crisis on Infinite Earths, and 1992 when Nightfall started. So,
do you remember when they're supposed to be starting these compact series also?
Yeah, I haven't heard much about that. There's a lot of stuff that DC has announced and then kind of left for like 6 months. So I don't know what their plan is. And I worry because that's a Marvel thing, and Marvel often like soft cancel things or push them out years when they do a terrible idea.
Yeah. Where's Otto when you need him? He'll be complaining about this.
So this is technically a little off the beaten path for us at TBU Comics, but I think Theo will understand. Zatanna, Bring Down the House, a Black Label graphic novel, will be coming out by our friend Mariko Tamaki, art by Javier Rodriguez. So since we've been big fans of Mariko Tamaki's Detective Comics run, and I also really like her Wonder Woman run and her Supergirl Being Super graphic novel, this should be quite fun. Zatanna is often connected to Batman characters, so we'll definitely keep an eye on this circumstance. But in the meantime, if you also enjoyed things like The Tower or The Neighborhood by Tamaki, you might want to check this out.
I'll be giving this a peek.
For sure. Let's move to our reviews, starting with Detective Comics number 1082. Written by Ram V. Art by Riccardo Federici and Stefano Farelli. I think it's Raphael, actually. Colors by Lee Lowridge. The main story is titled Gotham Nocturne, Act 3, An Elegy of Sand, Part 2, and The Question, Forget Me Not, Part 2. Above the false vision of Gotham City, Dr. Hurt tells Bruce he saved the Batman attacks, insisting it's a lie. And Hurt says Bruce should have used his money to turn stone into bread, removing all crime with his fortune. A clown capers about as Batman insists that it's not real. Meanwhile, Renee Montoya, The Question, jumps between rooftops in the real Gotham, searching for the answer. She sees Cassandra Cain Batgirl trying to hold on to her own case of Detective Fielding and her fading memory of Batman as the Orgrim reality engine erases the truth. Batman realizes his battle with the Asmer continues in circles and climbs aboard Dr. Hurt's blimp. He sees a city where he controls through machine guns and fighter jets and jumps off the blimp to crash the plane, saving a crowd of people. The Question and Batgirl interrogate an ex-cop, and he says Nash, the cop who murdered Fielding, was working for the Orgrims. Batgirl and Question both strive to remember Batman. Talia al Ghul stands alone in the desert until her men appear, dragging the body of another of her servants, dead. She knows that death stalks her as well as Batman now. So, we have two plot lines. We have the question, and we have Batman again. Did you find either of them more compelling than the other?
So, I'm going to say that hearing your review gives me a completely different viewpoint of the ending of that story, because I don't know why I thought that that guy that they were carrying was Bruce, and I'm assuming that's Flamingo in the background standing with the sword. Yes, at least you would think, with the pink and the...
You might be right. We do know Flamingo is going to be showing up, but I didn't... I will confess, colors are not my strong suit sometimes, so I might have missed the pink of the costume.
Yeah, I don't know why I thought that that was Bruce. I mean, the face was wrapped and everything, almost
it
like they
was
were
trying... confusing like the rest of this run.
Oh, of course. I mean, of course. And, you know... I assumed it was him because his face was wrapped, so of course to hide his identity. It's just, I don't know. I'm just, is it October yet? Probably not. But
oh man,
it says a lot when the question side is makes somewhat more sense than the actual quote unquote main story.
So you would say that the question side was more compelling and engaging.
Yeah, it just makes it's more clearer.
Yeah, you know? I agree. I'm still frustrated by it because, like, this reality engine thing really it doesn't make sense to me, and I don't like that some people can hold on to the memories and other people can't, and why, just so the story can happen, as the Screen Rant guy says. I do. So when I talk to people, and I feel like I might have mentioned this before, but when I talk to people who say they like this run, they tell me, I just like the vibes. And I will say the vibes on both of the halves of the story are compelling. I do still feel like the poetic nature, the operatic nature of it. And I especially do like the hard-boiled detective and sort of narration that you get in that kind of story with the question intertwined story. I remain frustrated that Renee is both the question and the commissioner. I think that's stupid. I don't think she should be the commissioner.
Well, you're going to get your wish.
Eventually. It's taking a while. And I feel like we should get a question miniseries with, heck, Renee and Cass. I mean, everyone knows how I feel about one of the other Batgirls, but Ron V does a good job with Cass here. Even if it doesn't make sense. And I will insist that it does not make sense, and I don't appreciate that.
You're not a-
Do you think... Does it matter, any of these fake visions that Bruce sees? Like, do they provide any insight into the nature of Batman for you? Do you see any connections with theories about Batman? I mean, I'm particularly annoyed with Dr. Hurt saying, you should have spent your money to turn stone into bread, and then crime would go away. I'm like... You know, rich people commit lots of crimes, too. Money doesn't stop crime. That is the stupidest thing ever.
And that Joker was the creepiest thing ever.
I mean, but that's a good thing. Like, we want creepy Joker, right? He should be creepy. Like, my complaint is not about the art. Are you ready to move on to the backup, or do you have any other thoughts?
It's October yet.
Let's move to the backup.
It's... I want it so much from this run.
Me too.
I don't know.
I do hope people don't come away thinking that we were coming into this run being like, oh man, I'm just not going to like this run. Because there have been runs where I personally was, shall we say, a bit close-minded about the Tomasi run. And I will say that some of those arcs did stand out well. I do have fond memories of the Mr. Freeze run in Tomasi's run. But I came into this excited. And this is not me wanting to hate the book. I look every week, every time I have to review an issue of this, I'm trying to figure out if there's a way into it for me. I am not finding it. And I wish some people who liked it would write in with some detailed things. Like, don't just tell me I like the vibes. Because, you know, I can get the vibes, but that doesn't... You're paying $5 or $6 if you're getting an alternate cover for this book. And I don't think vibes are enough to justify that. All right, let's move to the backup. And this is called His Name Was Dr. Hurt, Part 2. It's written by Dan Waters, and art is by Christopher Mitten. Colors by Triona Farrell. Our vengeance foursome heads towards a castle that has mysteriously appeared outside of Gotham, hosting Dr. Hurt's semi-centennial masked macabre. His abandoned wife is greeted by another woman claiming to be one of hundreds of brides. They tread deeper into the party, watching as four beautiful, brilliant, and hard-working men and women are tortured to death by gas. The man tricked by Hurt into jumping from a building with an empty grapnel gun starts shooting as the remaining three run deeper. The wife finds out that she drank poisoned wine like the other brides and dies. Down to two, they head up a staircase, but the remaining woman pulls a gun on the man, revealing that Hurt replaced her personality with his own and claims that she is Dr. Hurt. So, I will say, I like this backup more than the main story, but that's not saying very much. But my head hurts when I'm reading both of them because I don't appreciate the fact that none of this makes any sense. Why is there a castle outside of Gotham?
I don't get it. I just don't understand.
Dr. Hurt is the worst villain. He is so stupid. I'm tired of him. I was tired of him when Morrison used him.
Yeah. And we still don't know who the hell he is.
I believe that Tim Seeley did this thing that he was some kind of weird semi-robot, semi-organic thing who was brainwashed into thinking he was Dr. Hurt. And I liked that a lot better because I thought he was pathetic, and that backstory makes him more pathetic, and I appreciate that. But clearly, Ram V and Dan Waters are like, no, Dr. Herp is deep and cool. Well, you know what? I'm going to call him Dr. Derp because I hate him.
Yeah, I mean, and wasn't there at one point, I can't remember where I saw it, but someone had his identity listed, one of his identities listed as Thomas Wayne, and I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, that's what Grant Morrison had Dr. Hurt claim to be during, I think, R.I.P.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, because how much of R.I.P. do you remember outside of Jezebel Bett randomly showing up?
Hey, don't knock the Jez.
I will knock the Jez's head right off, like Talia did.
Mm-hmm. Then her daughter's going to come after you.
Wait, what are going to come after me?
Her daughter.
Jezebel had a daughter?
Oh my God, you obviously have not been read. You obviously did not read Nightwing. He had a baby with Blockbuster.
Oh yeah. That didn't stick in my head, clearly.
Because you don't respect the Jez.
I don't respect Jezebel Jett. That was a stupid plot line.
Maybe not as stupid as this.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the same. It was just a bunch of drugs and, like, random people conspiring.
And everybody dies.
And everybody dies pointlessly for no reason. All right. Let us give Detective Comics number 1082 a rating out of 5 Dr. Derps.
Dr. Derps. I will give it a 2 because of the art of the main story.
I put my ratings, shoot,
in the trash with the issue.
Oh, here it is. Okay, so you said 2. I have to say 3 because that's what I wrote in my review, and it's mostly because of the art. So our average is 2.5. Moving on to Batman number 145. This is Dark Prisons, Part 1, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Jorge Jimenez, woohoo! Colors by Tomu More. As the Joker finishes his tale of year one, Bruce tries to process what it all means. J- Joker's true goal is to break Zur-En-Arr, as breaking Batman is too easy. Joker relishes Batman's fury as Zur lives his life. In Gotham, Zur, in Failsafe's robot body, makes his debut after weeks of Batman's absence, taking down weapon smugglers with his technology and power. Jason arrives despite Oracle's warnings about Batman's fear implantation, and Zur tells Jason he's sorry, pretending to be Bruce. He says he loves Jason, but Jason cannot break the law again. Bruce uses Joker's back brace to pick his cell lock, then wraps cloth around his head and heads into the rest of Blackgate. He finds Vandal Savage, who hints at his plan. But before Batman can learn more, Failsafe's robot guards attack and capture Bruce. Zur-En-Arr hijacks all screens and speakers in Gotham and warns everyone that Batman is back. The Bat family, especially one Stephanie Brown, listen in shock. And Mayor Nakano calls Commissioner Montoya and warns her not to try to talk or work with Batman. She asks why, and Nakano says outside forces are pressing on him. Zur attacks Riddler, surprising him because of his help against Vandal Savage in Gotham War. Zur publicly claims that Riddler belongs to him, not the justice system. Damian confronts Zur on the rooftop as the rest of the Bat family, especially Steph, watches, wondering if it's really Batman. Uploaded into Failsafe. Bruce wakes up, tied to a chair, as Dr. Capito, his old teacher, tells him a story. So, we are back after Joker Year One, and how are you feeling about the getting back to the present day after being in the past and the future?
I feel better about Batman than I do about Detective for obvious reasons. I don't know. I'm still not sold on the whole Failsafe Zor thing. It just seems to be going all over the place now. You know, Zor might as well. I'm assuming Zor is now considering himself an AI instead of a personality, because how else can you fit all that's going on into comics? It's just, I don't know. It's interesting to see Capito still around.
Yeah, I had a friend who predicted that. I personally thought Capito was dead. Did you?
I didn't think he was dead, but again, I see all of the issues way ahead of time. So.
Well, I know that we both knew that when we recorded last time, but I remember when I read Joker Year One, I genuinely did think Capito was dead.
I didn't.
Ah, so you, like my friend, were, well, you are also my friend, but a different friend, were smarter than me, clearly.
Both left-handed people are. We're geniuses.
I don't know if my friend is. I'll have to ask him. So we did have a bit of conversation on the server about some of our listeners reading the issue and being a bit upset that it feels like Capito is now Joker's puppet master. How do you feel about how Zdarsky's handling the relationship between Joker and Capito?
I mean, it's possible. Especially considering how the night ended. You know, he wasn't really able to break Bruce. But, you know, as we kind of saw in Year One, it seems like he has a better hang on what's going on with Joker, especially considering they have, I'll use the term, similar goals. You know, he kind of wanted to break Bruce as well. And so, doing things with the Joker, I can see that.
Well, see, I didn't really consider Capito any kind of puppet master or even, I don't know. I see the Joker as a thief slash sponge, and he will just steal anything he likes. And if he doesn't want to do something, if he's not interested, you can't make him do it. You know, fear toxin has no effect on him. I think he likes stealing Capito's knowledge, but he has no real desire to play Capito's game. He plays his own game, and Capito has a huge ego.
And it's possible that may still happen. You know, he may just be leading them on, thinking that he's pulling the strings when in fact he has control the entire time.
Yeah. I mean, that's certainly my theory. I don't think Capito's in control. I mean, he's locked up in a cell with a toilet.
Yeah, I mean, he's basically, I mean, he mean Joker is basically Batman's opposite. So it's possible, just like he couldn't break Bruce, he couldn't do the same with the Joker. And the Joker's just playing him.
How do you feel about the Bat family showing up again? How do you think they're going to interact with Zurinar in the coming
years? How do you feel about the Bat family showing up again? Because actually, they've been around a while, save for a few or a particular individual. So how are you feeling that they're back around?
I am very excited. It's great to see Stephanie Brown again, because I've been missing her quite desperately.
You ought to just go ahead and write a couple of Stephanie Brown stories. Just when you get that urge, you can just pick it up and read it or add to it.
I mean, I write my own fanfic, but it's usually set when she was Batgirl or Robin. But do you think that the Bat family will fall for Zurinar's lie that he's actually Bruce's consciousness uploaded to the robot? Or do you think they're going to see through it and work against him?
I don't think they will. They can't be that crazy.
I hope so. I mean, Zdarsky definitely wants us to think that they are struggling to figure it out, but I think they know Bruce wouldn't do that. I hope.
Yeah, I think I am hoping that my boy Damien sees through it completely.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's playing it off right now, you know, and I think he breaks first. I would hope he breaks first, and then that will get the rest of the family to fall. I'll use the term fall in line, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, like he'll follow lead suit. The family and say, this is not my father.
Yeah, and they'll follow suit.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I hope so. That's definitely what I hope. What'd you think about Jorge's art? I mean, we had three issues with Giuseppe Camuncoli and Andrea Sorrentino. But we're back to Jorge. How do you feel about that?
I mean, you can't go wrong with it.
I mean, it does look pretty awesome. How do you like his Zurinar / failsafe design?
That was interesting. It kind of gave me Saga vibes with the, oh God, what the guy's name is, the robot head that basically had a, or, you know, something like Andy and She-Hulk, you know, just like an android kind of speaks. Just having that robot face with Bruce's image just looked like I was looking at a TV screen.
Yeah, that was interesting. I think it looks really cool. I think it's odd that Batman still has that weird hand, and Failsafe / Zurinar also has like tentacle fingers. Like, that's something that Bruce has been using his weird hand to.
But the tentacles was on both hands, not just the.
Right. No, so Bruce only has one weird hand, and Phil right. obviously yeah. has two, and probably does feet too.
Yeah, I thought you might have been insinuating that he completely copied everything.
No, but I'm curious to know what the thought process behind that, because it's not something I remember them doing in a lot of other Batman.
Got it.
So. We know this arc is called Dark Prison. Do you think that the Dark Prisons refer to Zurinar's control over Blackgate, where he's keeping all these prisoners? Or do you think he has an even darker, more secure prison that the Bat family and Batman will have to break into?
No clue.
Okay, yeah, I feel like both of those are options, but I don't really know. Let's move to our backup. This is called Doctor's Orders. Is not listed as a part one. It's written by Chip Zdarsky. Art is by Michelle Bandini. Colors by Alex Sinclair. Continuing directly from the main story, Dr. Capito tells Bruce about Joker's early encounters with him, including the murder of his first Arkham psychologist. Calling back to the I am a gun backups from early in Zdarsky's run, Joker tells of his first meeting with Zurinar, and Capito guesses that Bruce has finally made a backup personality. He encourages Joker to create emergencies to make Batman use Zurinar. Capito tells Bruce he was excited to see the battle of superhuman minds between Batman and Joker. And the backup ends with Joker, in Capito's flashback, dressed as a handyman before a huge building ready for mischief. So this is mostly, this almost feels like it's just part of the main story, even though it's structured like a backup with a new artist. Did you feel like it was part of the main story, or did you feel like it was more of a backup?
I felt it was more of a backup simply because I immediately thought back to Zdarsky's first backup with Zor and that first interaction with the Joker when he almost killed him.
Okay. I don't know. The way he transitioned into the backup threw me a little bit. Like, it definitely does have its own elements, but that transition was something that Zdarsky, there's too many Z's going on right now. It's something that I haven't seen Zdarsky doing with his backups yet. Although he did integrate the future stuff into the main story in Joker Year One. So I wonder if he's going to start treating the backups like 30 extra pages instead of, 10 extra pages to make 30 instead of a separate story. Because he kind of uses backups to tell parts of the story, like the Tim Drake story or the Catwoman story or the Vandal Savage story, which basically just don't show Batman's perspective, you know? But this one, Batman is listening to this story as Dr. Capitu tells it. So, I don't know, it just feels like a different structure than he's done previously. And it felt kind of like he was just telling a 30-page story instead of a 20 plus a 10. What'd you think of Michele Bandini's art? Another Italian, apparently.
Not as good as Jorge.
I mean, other than Dan Mora, there's not many people we're not going to say that about, though.
It's okay. I mean, I didn't have any issues with it.
I'm a fan of Michele Bandini. I first saw his work in either the Nick Spencer Amazing Spider-Man run or in the tie-in comics for the PS4 Sony Spider-Man game by Insomniac, written by Dennis Hopeless. And I really liked both of those things. I thought Michele Bandini did Michael. But Bandini's pencils are very appealing. I really like them. And I'm glad that he's doing this with Zdarsky. I don't know. He's not someone I was expecting to see or like super excited, but I'm glad to see it. It was pleasant. I like the art.
It was okay.
Do you think that this is going to continue in next month's backup too? It feels like it to me, but I wonder if I'm wrong.
Okay, so do you want me to give the
Virgin Eyes answer? Because I don't think I've read the next issue.
Okay, the Virgin Eyes answer is I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like it should. That's how the story ends, with the Joker dressed as a handyman. That feels like next month something crazy happens. All right. Let's give Batman number 145 a rating out of five Bat-Zur lies. Those are lies told by the Batman Zernar.
I was getting ready to say, what the hell is that? I will give it a 3.25.
All right, and I'm giving this a 3.75, and yes, a full half point is added for the appearance of Stephanie Brown. Over on the website, Scott gave it a 3.2, which gives us a 3.4 average, and we're almost at a mode of 3.25, but we're not, so I can't count it.
Somebody needs to come and help Ian, please.
I have so much wrong with me.
Hey, you got a second? The Batman Universe is looking for Batman fans with something to say. If you're interested in writing reviews of your favorite Batman books, or you want to contribute original content with articles like The Top 10 Forgotten Batman Villains, or Why Dead Didio's Exit from DC Was the Worst Thing to Ever Happen, then we want to invite you to join our TBU staff family as a writer. Just reach out to our email, tbu@thebatmanuniverse.net, and let us know that you want to become one of our writers. It's that easy. And honestly, there's no reason not to. You get exclusive access to our TBU staff Discord server, you get early access to comics, and you meet a lot of cool people. What are you waiting for? Email us at tbu@thebatmanuniverse.net and let us know that you want to become one of our writers.
All right, our last review of the night is Batman and Robin, number 7. This is called Cult of Man-Bat, Part 1. Written by Josh Williamson. Art by Simone DeMeo. Colors by Giovanna Nero. Man-Bat preaches to his cult about his hatred of Batman and his family, particularly one, Stephanie Brown, because they stole his destiny. Gotham, apparently. Shush is upset with him for wasting time with his cult instead of taking down Batman and Robin. Meanwhile, Flatline catches up with Robin and Batman and says she's in Gotham seeking her sister, Mila. Damian promises to help, and Batman tells him to be careful as he heads off to investigate Man-Bat's cult. Flatline tells Damian she was bored running Lord Deathman's criminal empire, but she sees the ghost of Ra's al Ghul calling her a liar. She tells Robin the clue she found in the name Slim, and Robin takes her to the closed Iceberg Lounge where Slim was a bartender. Masked thugs surprise them and they fight. Mila appears, her hair white just like Flatline's, and tells them to leave. Batman finds one of the cultists and interrogates him. The cultist claims he doesn't worship Man-Bat, but wants to change himself to fit the brutality of Gotham. He tries to transform using a pill, but dies instead. Shush appears, saying she'd like to team up with Batman against Man-Bat for his betrayal. So, first question is, Simone DeMeo's back on art. How do you like it in contrast with Nicola She's Mashiach?
I don't know. I know that when I was doing the reviews on Batman and Robin when it first started, I had a concern about, and not necessarily concern, but I made the statement that DeMeo's style of art seems to be more suited to do cover work, and that I may have tired of seeing it throughout an issue. But seeing that there was a break from him, you know, I guess makes it okay. You know, he's been gone for about 3 issues and now he's back. And I think that for me makes it a little bit more tolerable. But I will still say that I think his art is more suitable for the for covers, but it's also it's okay. I really like it, but again, it in doses.
Yeah, I remain a bit concerned about DeMeo's storytelling abilities. I had this problem first time I read him, which was the Harley Quinn Future State backups, where I was like, this is really appealing, but the storytelling doesn't always make the most sense. And I see that a lot in the fight scenes and how characters move from one panel to the next panel.
It's too pretty.
It's both too pretty, and it doesn't quite connect. The implied action between panels isn't quite as clear as I think it should be.
Yeah, I mean, it's just too pretty. I mean, when you want to have a fight scene and just some downright violence, the art and definitely with the palette of the colors he uses,
yeah, just it's makes it too samey. Everything's blue.
Yeah, it just makes it totally too pretty to be violent. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know. I like Nicola Chismachia, and I kind of preferred the art on the last couple issues because it felt more dynamic to me. And I believe Jeez Mashiach has said that he's coming back for 8 at least. So I will be happy. I know Steph will be sad, but maybe he'll draw a hotter Bruce Wayne.
Or maybe not.
What is Man-Bat's plan?
Are we certain this is Kurt Langstrom? I mean, I know it's...
I am not certain because... Man-Bat is also in the Gotham Academy backup in Brave and the Bold right now.
Well, that one is most definitely not Kurt Langstrom. That's not Kurt. That's some kid.
But Kurt is a teacher at Gotham Academy who's mentoring the kid.
Right, but we know that Man-Bat isn't Kurt Langstrom Man-Bat.
Right, but that Kurt Langstrom is not running a cult either.
Yeah.
Although, I guess that's your question. Is this Kurt? I don't really know.
Yeah, things have been so crazy since, quote unquote, he died. You know, and
yeah, with the Task Force Z and everything.
You know, for all we know,
man, it's not that happened. That's wild.
You know, yeah, quote unquote, he died, but it kind of makes me wonder whether or not that actually is Langstrom and it's not the demon that he supposedly suppressed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you
mean. Remember, he supposedly was able to suppress that demon back, but makes me wonder if that's actually the case. I don't know. This version of Man-Bat just seems
unhinged.
So counter to what we remember of Man-Bat of old.
Yeah. So what is Shush's plan? She originally says that she wants Man-Bat to take down Batman and Robin, and now she wants Batman to help her take down Man-Bat. What is going on?
Well, I think it's more or less she feels betrayed that she's kind of gone off the ranch, you know, and putting this cult together.
But like, what does she want that she wants to take down these major players? Like, what is her goal? Is she wants to take him down for bragging rights, or what do you think?
I don't know. I think ultimately she wants to take out Bruce, and in order to do that, she has to eliminate certain folks.
Yeah, I mean, I am 100% expecting her to backstab. And what in the world is Flatline Sister's plan? There's so many people with plans, and I don't know what any of them are.
So, I'm going to say this, and I totally don't believe it. I mean, and I had to look at it a few times, but her sister and Shush looked like they were wearing the same clothes.
Really? Do you think that they're the same person, or do you think that they're like just connected as part of the same organization?
Yeah, either or, yes.
Okay.
I mean, it could just be another Joshua Williamson thing to swerve us.
Well, it definitely seems like she's gotten like the same powers that her sister got, because her hair is the same color, and she talks about inheriting something from their grandfather.
Yeah. You know, and that's what we, you know, and we know from Robin, that's how Flatline did get her power. It was inherited from her grandfather.
Right. I don't know. Lots of questions, not a ton of answers, but it is enjoyable. I maintain that I still like the school stuff a bit better than this crime fighting stuff, which I don't want it to not have crime fighting stuff. I just kind of would like a more balance between the two, because I like the civilian stuff. I like Damian investigating the other students and his teachers. Like, that's something we're not getting in the other Batman titles, and I think that Williamson's doing it well, so I'd like to see more of that, and I'm sure that we will. I felt its absence.
And it's okay if it's, again, if it's a one-time, two-time thing that doesn't completely overtake the story. But now, I gotta ask, I thought Roz came back already. Didn't they bring him back? Too. I thought he came back in Lazarus Planet.
Yeah, I'm confused about why Flatline's seeing his ghost. Did she have anything to do with Ra's death? I thought that was all in Shadow War.
It was. Yeah.
That was Geo-Force who did all that.
Geo-Force killed him, yeah.
Yeah, that's so weird.
I mean, everything is weird with the Bat books. I mean, I still have no clue what time is where.
I have given up trying to figure that out. It does not make any sense to me.
I mean, because we had quote unquote, Bruce talking about when we moved in together. But I'm wondering if he's talking about son of Batman or what. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, because obviously this isn't Bruce in dark prisons, because that guy's under the ground dressing like Daredevil. Obviously this isn't Gotham Nocturne Bruce, who's in a desert facing Dr. Hurt in dreams and randomness. None of the titles fit with each other, and it's very confusing and frustrating. All right, let's give Batman and Robin number 7 a rating out of 5 Surprise Sisters.
I will give it a 3.5. I'm still enjoying this. I'm really liking it. Matter of fact, I might even say 3.75.
All right. Good for you, because that means that I, who said 3.5, do not get a mode. Over on the website, Daniel gave it a 4.3. So that gives us an average rating of 3.85 and no mode. Now that means that Detective Comics got 2.5. This is our average ratings. Batman got 3.4. And Batman and Robin got 3.85. So that still fits with our general feelings of the run.
Yep.
All right, let's move to Greater Gotham. Starting with Batman, The Brave and the Bold, number 10.
Based on Batman stories only, I will give it a thumbs up.
Absolutely. I am really enjoying this Man-Bat slash Maps slash Bruce dating Professor Isla McPherson. It's really cute. Love the art, as usual, from Carl Kerschel. I also really enjoyed the Dan Waters and Ricardo Ortiz black and white short story, and the other stories, which are not Batman family, but they're reasonably fun. Well, I guess technically there's a Duke Thomas story, but that wasn't the best. But it definitely wasn't the worst either, so... Next, The Penguin, number 7.
Thumbs down. I'm tired of past story, Penguin stories. Let's get back to the main thing.
Sorry, I need to remember which one this is.
This is the one where he encounters Batman.
Oh, this is in the past.
Yes.
And he basically runs a con job on Batman, framing other crime lords for his murders. I mean, it's fine. I'd say neutral. I'm sad that we lost Roberto De La Torre, but he went over to Conan, and people are really loving that title. Poison Ivy, number 20.
Thumbs down. And I just, I don't know. We had a conversation about this on the server, of course, and I don't like how they're making Ivy look like this floozy. You know, she's slept with how many people now, or she's messed around with how many people now in this run.
Well, and the question is, are they portraying it as a villainous trait, or are they trying to make us feel like it's romantic?
Yes.
Both? I don't know. Saying, I haven't been reading it.
I don't know. It doesn't seem romantic at all.
Okay.
With the exception of Harley.
Right, right. Okay, and that's an obscene for me, obviously. Birds of Prey, number 7. We're bringing this back, at least for this issue, because Batgirl, Barbara Gordon, and Batgirl Cassandra Cain are both in this issue.
I'm going to say it's a neutral, but it's enough for me to read it again.
I'm also going to say neutral. I still have huge structural problems with this book. But the Dinah and Babs dynamic specifically is something that I really enjoyed. I think Thompson captured them in a way I haven't really seen since 2008, when Simone was last writing them. And then, of course, I thought Dixon wrote a really great Babs and Dinah as well. So that is a huge boost. I would honestly give the last arc kind of a thumbs down. I know, depending on your fandom of certain characters, you may have liked that, and that's fine, but as a fan of the Birds of Prey, I did not like the previous arc for just tons of reasons, and hopefully this upcoming arc will be more my taste.
Me too.
Yeah?
Because it's more OG.
Right, exactly. I am so sick of the Birds of Prey being generic girl team. The Birds of Prey is not generic girl team. It is Oracle and Black Canary, and in my personal opinion, also Huntress. I am perfectly fine with other people joining the team, like Big Barda and
Harley. No, I don't want Harley
on the team at all. No, absolutely not. But Lady Blackhawk, I loved her addition to the team. So it's not that I'm closed to that, but you have to have the core, in my opinion, for it to really be Birds of Prey.
Agreed.
All right.
And you know, and even I mentioned, you know, when looking at this, you know, yeah, it's, you know, Barbara's not Oracle. She's in the Batgirl suit, and that's okay. It's still Barbara.
If they're writing her right, that's the big thing. Because a lot of people write her wrong. The Bat-Man, First Knight, number one. So this is our 1940s World War II Bruce Wayne fight zombies in Gotham.
I had to read it a second time. You know, that old-style storytelling caught me off guard a little bit. Hadn't read something like that in a while. I will, but on second reading, I will give it a thumbs up.
I'm giving this a neutral trending up. I was expecting something different. I wasn't expecting something this violent or edgy in content. And that's not generally my taste. I didn't really like Batman Damned. It's just not what I prefer. And, but the craft was really well. Like Jurgens and Mike Perkins. Yeah. They both did bring their A games. I'm not saying it's badly crafted at all. I just did not enjoy it that much. Outsiders, number 5.
Oh, God. What do I want to do about this one? I will say thumbs up. I think it left some intriguing questions from all three. You know, I've always had a question about Drummer. Luke, seeing what I imagine is a future self, definitely raises eyebrows in an interesting, intriguing way. And then who knows whatever's going on with Kate. She's always up to something. So I'm going to say a thumbs up.
I'm going to say neutral trending up, partly because I'm still not sure what DC is doing with Nocturna. Sometimes they treat her like a standard villain. Sometimes they treat her like she's like Batwoman's Joker. I don't think she fits as Batwoman's Joker. It was okay. I didn't feel like it was as insightful or clever as other issues. I did like it better than last issue. I'm not a fan of replacing Jenny Sparks with Jenny Crisis. That feels too meta and insular and self-referential, whereas this one at least felt like it was stories based on the characters themselves, so there was actual relations between the characters. But it was very trippy, which, I mean, it's a planetary book, so it's going to be trippy.
And Drummer just beheading.
That was fun.
That was just insane.
I thought that was fun.
Although she did look rather cute the way she, when she dressed up for the party.
Yeah. We're closing with Batman Dylan Dog number one. Now, this is a translation of an Italian comic from about a decade ago. Not exactly, but about. And it's 80 pages.
Yeah, it was so much. I got through half of it and just gave it up. You know, I tried reading it at the same time not long after I read First Knight, so. Yeah, I will. So based on what I read, I will give it a thumbs up.
I'll say neutral. I don't understand why Selina is sleeping with this main character. I don't really understand who this main character is. Batman is fine. The art is nice, but very blue. And I think I might be a little blued out after Batman and Robin. I don't know. It just didn't stand out to me as being particularly awesome, but it definitely wasn't bad. All right, and that brings us to our Patreon supporters. Every episode, we like to give a shout-out to all the people who contribute at a certain level. Thank you to Lisa Slack, Johnny McCloskey, Ian Miller, Ed Grouse, David Richards, Joshua Lavin-Bertoni, Captain America, Donald Townsend, Rob O, Caspian73, Brendan Roberts, and Stephanie Mounds. Thank you all for helping us keep our archive on the website and all of our episodes available for people to stream and listen to. We very much appreciate you.
We do.
All right. That brings us to the end of our episode. And I think partly because we didn't have Steph, so we unfortunately didn't get all of her insights. But we did zip through all our reviews and our Greater Gotham. even though we had three whole issues to get through. So, here we go with the end of the episode. This is Ian.
And this is Theo.
And get better soon, Steph. And to all our listeners, we'll see you next time.